Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Welcome to the NBA Roadshow, episode number 234. My name is John Morgan. I am in Mexico City, Mexico right now. Cole Coffee is not with me. He's back in Las Vegas, but that's okay. I got something even better than Cole Coffee. I got my man Rodrigo Del Campo. You know, if we're coming to Mexico, we're getting Rodrigo Del Campo, a man of many talents, many roles. But, you know, the man behind Indiscutido.com, that's what matters. And Spanish language broadcasting, all kind of stuff. Bottom line is Spanish language MMA, Mexican MMA. If you need knowledge of it, he's your man. How you doing, brother?
As always, with way too many work and too little money. No, we're good. We're good. Tired. A little sleepless, but happy, man. The UFC finally back in Mexico City after a couple of years.
I was going to say, I mean, I guess we knew we were going to come back. It's been 2 years, and yeah. You and I talked last time we were here. We knew it wasn't going to happen in 2019. We knew there was a TV deal issue going on, but now there is a new TV deal in place. It's been on since the beginning of this year. 2018. We'll be back in 2019. That it's been the beginning of this year. It's on Fox now, whereas before it was kind of behind a paywall. Fox isn't exactly like Televisa where it's everywhere, right? Or is it? How big is Fox?
Big. I mean, 2018 was a lame duck year. They had a new deal with Fox that was already signed, and they were from Central America down, they were on Fox, and they did 2018 with Televisa in Mexico behind a paywall. Fox is big, like from the sports networks in Latin America, ESPN, Fox, Claro Sports, where I work. Fox is the biggest of them all. They have the most screens. But that doesn't mean that they're doing the best job, which is the problem right now. They're not broadcasting full cards. I mean, the first prelims, I think they're doing Mexico. They did Uruguay. I think that'll be it. They're not doing the early prelims, never on air. And they're pushing the cards to like Fox Sports 2, Fox Sports 3, where Fox Sports 3 isn't really on that many TVs. So it's been kind of weird working with Fox for this first year for people, and we'll see how it goes. I mean, they have a long way to go with this deal.
That's interesting because that reminds me of, like, you know, when they were on Fox in the United States, it was like, well, is it on FS1? Is it on FS2? Oh. Is it over here? Is it there? And you have to track it down. That makes it so hard on the viewer.
Pay-per-views in Latin America are just crazy confusing. Like, the early prelims can only see them on UFC Fight Pass. Second prelims will be in one of the three Fox Sports channels, 1, 2, or 3. And then the main card will be behind paywall. The Fox in Latin America has this Fox Premium thing. It's kind of like HBO. It's a set of like 5 channels,
right?
All of them dedicated to movies. And on one of them, Fox Action Premium, they put the main cards of the UFC fight. So if you want to watch a pay-per-view event, a numbered event, completely, you have to pay $10 for Fight Pass, your cable bill for the middle prelims, and then an extra, which is like $10 a month, for the premium channels to watch the main card.
It's
a fucking mess.
I thought the whole idea was to get not behind a paywall. And wasn't that the problem we talked about last time? Was there a subscription network, and nobody can afford to pay that, and that's not what people are doing? I thought that was the whole point of this deal.
So Fight Nights, you get them on Fox Sports, and then the number of events is the ones that you get the main card behind a paywall.
Wow. That's mind-blowing to me.
And it's like super confusing.
I thought I was going to sit down with you and you were going to say, John Morgan, we got it. We're moving in the right direction now. We got the new deal in place. We're back. We got live events. We're moving in the right direction.
It's so weird. I mean, it really is weird. Like, everyone thought that when we got to Fox, when the UFC got back to Fox, they want to treat it like a premium company. And the thing is, like, Fox in Mexico is in a kind of transition. You saw in the States this buyout from Disney to a lot of Fox networks. Like, this is why we had the prelims in FX the other day in the U.S., because FX is now owned by Disney. But in Mexico, the government didn't allow Disney to buy Fox. They say it would be a monopoly, which they're right.
Right.
So in Mexico, Fox Sports is looking for a new buyer. from Central America on down, they're part of Disney right now.
That's so crazy.
So it's getting kind of confusing. And Fox, especially in Mexico, they have way too many licenses. They have like four teams from the Liga MX here in Mexico. They have baseball. They have NASCAR. They have way too many things.
They've even got a ton of fight sport as well. I was going to, yes, yeah, I talked to a gentleman earlier. He said they have Bellator. I think they, what a Glory.
Bellator. They had Glory sometimes. They had another kickboxing company in South America. So the problem, I think it really is they have way too many licenses. And they have sometimes trouble on the weekends, especially in Mexico. A lot of teams in Mexico play on Saturdays, like at 5 p.m. and 7 p.m. And now you get these cards that are starting here in Mexico City, 4 p.m. first fight locally, which is like central time in the States. So they're kind of in a bind on a lot of weekends.
It's so interesting because, you know, like UFC on ESPN, big deal in the United States. Yeah. You know, I mean, obviously it's a big deal. But I did always say, you know, when you were on, you know, FS1 and they don't have anything else. When you were on Spike and they didn't have anything else.
They push it.
They push it. I mean, you become the focus.
You're the star.
That's it. And so there's something to be said about being alongside those powerhouses, being alongside soccer, being alongside all the pro sports in the United States. But, yeah, then you don't get the spotlight of being the star.
There's definitely, like, there's some rubbing off, especially in Mexico, of being on a network big. I think they have, I mean, they're obviously not U.S. numbers, but like 40 million, 45 million screens in Latin America, which is the biggest. I think it's the biggest, bigger than Fox, than ESPN. Claro Sports, where I work, we're in about 25 million screens in Latin America. So you get a sense of the size. It is a big deal to be on Fox.
Right.
Let's get that straight. It's a big feel to have Fox on the back. Do not be like every single fight behind a paywall, which was with the UFC Network and with Televisa that didn't really care for the UFC at all and didn't really push it.
All right, let's talk about Mexico, like where the passion for MMA has evolved in the last 2 years. It's been 2 years since we've been down here. What's the appetite? I mean, has it grown? Has it fallen? What do you get the feel?
Mexico's in a weird place with MMA. There's barely any local MMA, which is a big problem. Companies don't really sponsor MMA in Mexico. It's difficult to get a sponsorship. And I'm telling you, as an independent owner-operator of an MMA website, sponsors don't really go to MMA companies, MMA promotions. Invest a lot of money, lose a lot of money, and then get out of the game because the sponsors aren't there. No?
Right.
So right now you have, like, I think one or two promotions that are kind of doing well in Mexico, and that's it. So you have a lot of fighters, and they don't really have where to fight.
That's tough.
And then the UFC, with that transformation when they were bought by Endeavor, they decided to cut the Latin America development programs.
Right.
And we stopped making the Ultimate Fighter because you have no network to actually pay for it. Televisa used to pay for the Ultimate Fighter. Claro Sports tried to salvage the Ultimate Fighter. And that was when Jamie Pollock was fired and when all the whole restructuring of Latin America happened. So that deal was dead. And that's the problem. There's a passion for MMA, but right now there is no path for Mexican fighters or for Central American, South American fighters to get to the UFC. That's the problem right now.
That's tough.
With not the Ultimate Fighter, with no development program, there really isn't like a path. I mean, it's difficult for a Mexican citizen, for a South American citizen, to get a visa to go fight in LFA, to go fight in Titan, to go fight overseas. So you end up fighting in local shows where the matchmakers in the UFC can't really gauge your level.
Right.
You can sign with Combat Americas, but Combat Americas is not, they have made it pretty clear. They're not going to be a feeder series.
Right.
If you're going to sign with us, you're going to sign for five or six fights. And if you get the call from the UFC, we are not letting you go to UFC.
And it's a scary proposition for a prospect.
It's a warning they tell the fighters. I mean, this is not new information.
Right.
They tell them.
Yeah.
We're not letting you go. You're for six fights. That's it. So there's not really a path to get to UFC right now.
That's interesting. Okay, so for anybody that doesn't know, the developmental program that you talk about, the UFC for a long time brought fighters to the United States, right? Put them at like Jackson's,
AKA. Four programs. It was the first one at Jackson's, 2013. This is the program that gave us Brandon Moreno, Jair Rodriguez, Teco Quiñones, Alejandro Perez, et cetera, et cetera. Then the second program was American Top Team. Third and fourth with a King's MMA. They had a group of like 12 fighters, 6 months to a year, full scholarship with training, per diem, and all you do is train.
It's amazing.
What was the purpose? Not only to get fighters to go to the U.S. And fight for the UFC, but to get fighters accustomed to the way the U.S. trains MMA.
Right.
So they can come back to their towns, to their cities, and change the culture in their gyms, change the training, and then you can get fighters developing on those nations.
You know what's interesting to me is that the UFC never really talked about it. You would want to ask them about
it. Super secret.
I don't understand why. I mean, that's such a great program. I mean, the amount of money and time that they invested, and like you said, not just to find fighters for the UFC right then, but to help develop the culture and to make it better. And I don't understand. You would talk to them about it, and they never wanted to speak about it on record, and I don't get it because, to me, that's nothing but good PR.
Well, Carlos, who is sitting right here next to me, Carlos Contreras Legazpi from Milenio, and I went in 2013 to Albuquerque because four of those guys were fighting, and we had some hardships with the UFC leadership because they didn't want it to get to be known that they were there.
So weird.
You know?
I don't get it.
So, I don't know.
Well, let me ask you this. Okay, so the UFC Performance Institute is coming to Mexico City,
yes,
right? I'm understanding they've identified the land. It's an existing building that they're going to convert.
It's around here.
Is that right?
We're not saying where we are.
Yeah.
We'll talk about it when we're done. But it's really close from here. It's really close from my work. It's like three blocks away from
where I work. Oh, that's going to be super convenient for you, man. That's phenomenal. Okay, so that's going to happen. And I'm assuming once they open it, just like China, you'll have a champion like 3 months later, right? That's the way it works.
That's the way it works,
Yeah, that's the way it works. But no, all right, so I'm excited about this. I mean, China, of course, it happened that Zhang Weili became a champion right after. She was not a product of the Institute, to be clear.
Yeah, no.
But, of course, what they're doing in China is an investment in the future, right, where they're finding athletes. And unlike in the United States, they're actually training them and teaching them. They're going to follow that same model here in Mexico.
Yeah.
So I think that's got to be exciting, right? But that now, because of what you've told me, I'm a little bit concerned. So if they're getting these athletes and they're, hey, man, we're teaching them and we're showing them.
Where are they going
to
fight?
But if there's nowhere to fight.
Exactly.
That could be a little bit of a challenge.
Exactly. And then you get kind of mixed signals because you get, we're doing a PI. I heard there might be an event in October here in Mexico when they show the land to the media. But then you come back after 2 years with no open workouts, with no ceremonial weigh-ins. So it really is the mixed signal.
Okay,
I'm interested in Mexico as a market. We're going to push Mexico. We'll be back in 2019. There's no open workouts. There's no ceremonial weigh-ins. From what I understand, there's not going to be any UFC authority here in Mexico. And no Dave Shaw. I think Dave Shaw is not coming to Mexico. But you're doing a PI. So, I mean, it really is the mixed signal. I mean, it might be a budget thing with what you spent in Abu Dhabi promoting, with what you're going to spend in Australia. It's going to be a probably an expensive event for the UFC. That might be it. But like to the average consumer, they say, okay, the UFC hasn't come here in 2 years. You're doing a fight night where we already had a couple of pay-per-views and then no open workout, and then they're releasing an event for public.
There's not.
If you don't have tickets,
you're
shit out of luck. You're not watching anything.
It's crazy, man. All right, let me ask you this. Okay, so you mentioned it. When we first came here in 2014, we had the pay-per-views, back-to-back years, 20,000 people in Mexico City Arena. Amazing. Came back. It's not really fair to compare because they're fight nights, you know, 10,000, 11,000, which is not bad. I mean, it, same thing in the U.S. A fight night is not supposed to get 18,000, 20,000. If they did a pay-per-view event right now, had this been a pay-per-view, could there have been 20,000 tickets sold?
I think the problem is they want to still do events locally, which I get. And that's what you have to do. The problem is right now, if you want to do a pay-per-view, there's no local star to get to headline,
right.
You know? If Calvin had won the belt, if Brian Ortega had won a belt, maybe. But I don't know if the UFC understands that Mexico, I mean, it's hard for the fighters to come here. But Mexico is a metropolis, man. Mexico is L.A. It's New York. I mean, like, next week, Iron Maiden is filling at a 30,000 stadium. The Cure is playing in a couple of weeks. You know, we get those shows. The NBA comes to Mexico. The NFL comes to Mexico. Formula One comes to Mexico. So you can bring any show from the UFC to Mexico City.
It's got
to
be top level.
No. It's got to be top level A, and if you bring a top level event, you'll sell 20,000 tickets.
Right.
It doesn't have to be a Mexican fighter.
Interesting.
Like, it would be awesome if it would be a Mexican fighter. Like, I don't know.
So it doesn't have to be Cain Velasquez.
But, like, for example, the first option for this fight night was Jair against Jose Aldo.
Right.
That was the first option for the headliner. That fight would have sold 20,000 tickets.
Former champion.
I have no doubt that Aldo Rodriguez would have sold 20,000 tickets.
Interesting.
No doubt.
What about Cain Velasquez right now? How is his, I guess, absence impacting the market? And I mean, are you concerned that he's not going to fight again. I mean, it looks like he's pretty good at this Lucha Libre stuff.
Personally, I'm happy.
Yeah.
I'm really happy for him.
Yeah.
He's, I don't know if people know, Kane, first and foremost, is a family man.
Yeah.
And I think that's the difference. I know a lot of people in AAA, if you watch the Twitch broadcast in Spanish, Jose Manuel Guillen is a good friend of mine. He does a play-by-play for AAA in Spanish. I mean, Michelle looks happy. Cora looks happy. Cain looks happy. His wife, his daughter, they look happy. Cain looks happy. I don't think we're going to see him back in the Octagon.
Wow. Does that hurt the market?
He's landing Thursday night in Mexico. Probably going to talk to him on Friday. We'll see. It hurts the market because Cain is 20,000 tickets instantly sold.
Right.
That's where it hurts. But you have to understand that when you got to Mexico City, Cain was at a crossroads where he had been injured before, where he had long layoffs before, where you couldn't really say we're going behind Cain to this market because you didn't really know what you were going to get from Cain.
Right.
And you got injuries. Like, it sucked.
True.
You know, it happens to those NCAA Division I guys. It happens. Those guys destroy their bodies in college.
Yep.
Wiseman, all those guys destroy their bodies in college. That's what happened with Cain. I mean, they're talking about training at AKA. No. Those Division I athletes destroy their bodies in college.
Point.
Some of them, like Ryan Bader, have no problem. Some of them, like Chris Wiseman and Cain Velasquez, just get injured all the time.
Yeah, no question. All right, well, we ended up. Man, I wish Aldo would have been a good fight. We ended up with Yair Rodriguez versus Jeremy Stephens. It is a good fight, but I feel like, you know, hardcores are excited. I mean, you know what Jeremy Stephens brings. When he comes in, he's coming to fight. It's not going to be a boring fight. It's not going to be a slow fight. He's going to push Yair Rodriguez, and I think it's great. But I do feel like the interest this week isn't necessarily just all in. And I think maybe it's, I don't know, just maybe because there's no real ranking at place. We don't know. It doesn't really mean anything. And I don't want to say it doesn't mean anything in the division, but it doesn't mean automatically a guy's a number one contender or something like that. I think it's going to be an exciting fight. But I also wonder, too, I mean, Yair Rodriguez, this guy is a phenomenal athlete and well-spoken, good-looking kid, professional, everything about it. He's exciting when he fights. But I feel like, you know, his layoffs and the time in between fights is cost. Is that what it is? Because I don't feel like Yair quite resonates here yet as like an actual star.
Oh, he does.
Yeah.
I mean, he does. I mean, this is the, and I was hearing, I can't even remember which other MMA podcast I heard this. The thing you have to look culturally to what Mexican people look for their idols. Like in the US, we're accustomed to the show of guy, to the, you know, that bravado.
Right.
Look at the big stars in Mexico, like Chavez, like Canelo, like Juan Manuel Marquez. They're all soft-spoken, they're respectful, they're humble.
Interesting.
That's what the Mexican audience actually looks for in a hero. Yair resonates with the audience. I think that all the tickets they've sold, which, I mean, the show is doing good, are because of Yair. And we'll see what happens.
That's interesting, man. I talked to him earlier this week, and you know, he was kind of soft spoken. He was kind of reserved, and
he is like that.
And
he's
I think he's always like that.
Yeah.
But I felt even more so, and I didn't know if maybe it was just a product of him being so like overworked and having like so many. I mean, he spent like 3 hours at ESPN or whatever, you know.
I think it's probably that. I mean, you know, he doesn't like those responsibilities. I mean, I get it. It's way too much for him sometimes. I think the UFC sometimes pushes someone to carry the market alone. It happens with Eric Perez. It happened with Fabricio Werdum. It happened with those guys. And Yair is not that kind of guy. I mean, I think that if you have to worry about something with Yair, is that he hasn't really had a stable camp in the last 2 years. That for the three fights he signed them after the Frankie Edgar fight, the Sabit, which he got injured,
sure,
the Korean Zombie, and this fight, the team has changed around him. I mean, he's in his place like he's kind of doing a boxing camp where he picks coaches, picks a spot, and then goes train. He trained like in a very representative place for fighters in Mexico, which is the Centro Ceremonial Otomi, outside of Mexico City near Toluca, 3,300 meters of altitude, which is like 1,000 more than in Mexico City, where Marquez, Chavez, and all those guys used to do the. If you're a boxing fan, Carlos Cuadras is doing a 2 month camp right now at Centro Ceremonial Otomi.
Wow.
So for the Mexican fan, that's like really resonating. That's all of my idols train at Centro Ceremonial Otomi, and now Yair is training there. So I think you have to be like a little more culturally aware.
Interesting.
Of what those countries need in an idol.
Yeah, that's interesting. I do, because I do feel like, I mean, I think everybody realizes Yair's talent. I mean, you can't not recognize it. But it is weird. He doesn't really factor into the rankings. I mean, nobody's talking about him as a real contender. But when he goes out there, he's exciting. I don't know what it's going to take for him to get that level. I wonder if it's just fight more consistently, basically.
Basically, because you see what the UFC is suffering to him. I mean, even with the difficulties they've had, they offered him Savit, they offered him Jose Aldo, and they offered him Brian Ortega was in talks to maybe fight Jair here. So you see how the UFC looks at Jair. Like, they're looking at him still with everything that's going around as an exciting fighter, as a top five fighter, as a fighter that might be able to challenge for the championship at any point in his career. And this is a defining moment for him. This is a very different... I mean, he got the Korean Zombie fight. He did that improvisation, which makes people go crazy with Jair, because that's it. And he tells, you know, I train, and then go in there and just let it flow. And those things happen.
That is incredible.
You know, so the UFC still, I think with the matches they try to give him, they still consider him a top fighter.
How about Jeremy Stephens? How's the market reacting to him? I mean, as we said, we know he's going to come in and fight. You know, maybe not recognized as a contender or champion or anything like that, but we know he's going to put on an exciting fight. He is embracing his Mexican ties, right? He's saying, hey, listen, I got a Mexican wife at home. I got a Mexican kid at home. I'm trying to get a paycheck for them. And he spent like a month down here getting ready.
People forget that in 2014 when we fought Cub Swanson, he went to the weigh-ins with the Mexican national team shirt.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
This is not new. Yep. The thing, I'm Mexican. Like, oh, yeah, you're fighting in Mexico. You're Mexican. This is not new, you know? He had a good deal. There's a gym in Tijuana called Entram Gym, which is basically the best gym in Mexico because that's the gym that has the most UFC fighters in Mexico. They have four fighters here this weekend, Teco Quiñones, Polo Reyes, Martin Bravo, and Brandon Moreno. And they have a deal between the trainers, Raul Arbizu and Eric Del Fierro, and the guys from Entram can go and train in Alliance MMA,
right,
which is where Jeremy connected. Jeremy has been sparring with some of those guys for 4 or 5 years, Dom also. And Teco, which hails from Zacatecas, got them a house, talked with the government, they got a good gym. So that's why they all got there.
Maybe you could touch on that because Danny Segura was here earlier. He just stepped out, but he was telling me, and I didn't realize that the government, and you just touched on there, was involved in the sponsorship of this kind of super camp that, like you said, Stevens was there, Angela Hill was there. You know, they had this crew. What do you know about that? And what does that say that if the government's getting involved, that's got to be a positive, right?
It's a local government. It's the government of Zacatecas. Teco Quiñones from Zacatecas. He started doing his own MMA He started his own MMA promotion like a couple of years ago. They had a couple of shows in Zacatecas. They recognized him as a famous athlete from the UFC, hailing from Zacatecas. Zacatecas isn't really well known for having sports persons in Mexico. They got a good deal, and he said, oh, hey, we need an altitude training. Zacatecas, the altitude is basically a little more than Mexico City.
Right.
And that the I think that you call it a mayor in the U.S.,
right,
Presidente Municipal in Mexico, said, hey, we have a house. We can give you a house. How many people are going to be there? We can give you space in a gym. Teco's original team is in Zacatecas, so those guys moved the cage to the new facility, got the mats going, and they were there for 6 weeks. You know, there's seven fighters that were in that camp. It's the four interim fighters, and also Jeremy Stephens, Ciara Eubanks, Andrew Hill, and then you got a lot of fighters from Entram and from Alliance helping here in Mexico City. Eric Del Fierro spent a bunch of time here in Mexico. Gaston Reino. So they got a little, like, they were like 15 fighters.
That's pretty cool,
house, man.
That's pretty cool. Moving forward. All right, well, let's just sum up the main event then. We know kind of what the stakes are. I mean, as you said, this could be a defining moment for Jair, right? I mean, this is a big moment. I asked him about, hey, do you feel like this is the moment you kind of start carrying the flag for Mexican MMA? And he doesn't like to talk about that. And, you know, he said, listen, that's up to all of us. You know, he pointed to Grasso and Aldana and Moreno and everybody else, said, no, we're all going to do this. But as far as the fight itself, the X's and O's, listen, speaking of Jeremy, I mean, I know he's always fired up, but he seems extra fired up this week. And that dude is dangerous. And he's saying, look, I want to go out there and I don't want to just win. I want to embarrass him out there. Break it down as far as just the analysis. Are you worried about this fight for Jair? I mean, of course, it's a dangerous guy. Or do you feel like Jair's too much for Stevens?
No, I don't know if he's too much for Stevens. I think I'm worried about Jeremy because he's so fired up.
Right.
I can't remember the last time I saw a fighter that fired up that actually did good in the fight.
True.
You know, those feelings, that heat, it carries you way over the line when you're fighting. You know, he's emotional because Jair gave an interview to an outlet here in Mexico before the start of the sale of the tickets where he said, I didn't want to fight Jeremy.
Right.
He had a good point. I mean, his point is, I wanted Sabit. I wanted Jose. I wanted Brian. I wanted a fighter that was difficult and that would give me a spot up the rankings. Jeremy's as difficult as them. But if I win, he's coming off two losses. What does that give me?
I don't
me?
Get the respect.
Yeah, for the analysts, for the hardcore. That motherfucker, if you beat Jeremy Stephens, you're going to be the king.
Right.
Okay, you're back. You're good. You're a top five. We see it. For the casual fan, they say, hey, you beat a guy who's got two losses. That was his point. And he was kind of right. I don't know if it was good the way he expressed it, but it was kind of right. And that's what got Jeremy upset and really fired up.
No question. He is fired up. Would Yair and Ortega have done 20,000 seats?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's that big a star already.
People like Brian here in Mexico City.
That's awesome.
In Mexico, people really like Brian. Obviously, the Max Holloway fight kind of brought the stock down. But we saw the traffic, man, for Brian Ortega, Max Holloway. People in Mexico City, Brian is going to be probably at the fight.
Yep.
You'll see him when they flash Brian on the screen.
It's going to be big.
I don't know if Kane's staying for the fight. Henry and Brian Ortega are probably staying for the fight. Masvidal, I don't know if he's staying for the fight. I don't know. He supposedly is coming to Mexico City. I don't know if he's going to eventually come or not. When they flash them on the screen, you'll see, I can bet that Brian Ortega will get a bigger reaction than Henry Cejudo.
Wow, that'll be amazing. All right, one last thing in this main event. What would be the ideal scenario? Would it be, we know that the Mexicans love a scrap, so would the ideal scenario be a back-and-forth battle that Yair eventually, you know, kind of like a zombie fight, you know, where it's just an amazing fight and he wins, or would it be some kind of domination? What would be best?
The ideal scenario for the Mexican fan, where I think they would go crazy, they already, when they see Yair, they want to see a crazy knockout. They want to see the feeling knockout. They want to see the Korean zombie. Like, the Mexican fan would be happy if Yair goes in and, like, in 30 seconds just starches Jeremy with a flying knee or something. I don't see it that quick. I don't see a quick fight on Saturday. I think those guys are way too prepared and study each other to get someone get a quick knockout. But for the fan, I think if you poll the people in the arena, they'll probably tell you, hey, I want a 30-second knockout.
All right. Well, we mentioned a very fired-up Jeremy Stephens, and I think no better way to witness that or at least hear that firsthand than to hear my interview with him from yesterday morning. Sat down with Jeremy for a little bit for a quick one-on-one. And by the way, Jeremy Stephens, sponsored by Manscaped.com. That's right. If you go to the video of it, you can see he's sporting the Manscaped gear. So a fellow Manscaped supporter there. Or supported by Manscaped. Don't forget, 20% off and free shipping with the code ROAD, R-O-A-D, at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use code ROAD. Come on, just do it. They got good products, I promise. And while you're doing that, get one browser open, order up your Manscaped gear, and the other, listen to this, Jeremy Stephens. You've been doing this for a long time, but back in the main event in Mexico City, you know it's a fight town. You're facing the hometown guy. I mean, give me the feeling, the emotion coming into this one.
It's just an honor, let alone to be fighting in Mexico. You know, I have roots here. You know, my daughters are Mexican. My wife's Mexican. I love Mexican food. You know, I love the people most of all. You know, I've been down here for 5.5-6 weeks in Zacatecas and never been embraced like the way that I have. And it's just, I feel right here at home, man.
Is it a little bit of a false sense of security, I wonder? Because, you know, knowing that Mexican culture that you have and the ties to it, and even the support that you're getting, you got to know on Saturday night, man, they're going to be booing you and they're going to be going for Yair, right?
Who knows? I don't put no limiting beliefs on everything. You know, I've been turning heads since I was 16 years old about people. You know, I've been told they're going to kill me in Brazil, and then I end up killing their boy. So I'm going to be turning heads, man. I feel like I got a lot of fans here. I have a lot of Mexican fans. I have Mexican roots. Pero is, you know, if this country's not going to save him, bro. It's not. You know, he's a kid. He's a chamaco. And I'm a man. You know, I fight like a man. I don't run, you know, and I'm here to whoop his ass. I'm here to embarrass him and outpoint him and just whoop him every single step of the way.
You were on quite the run, man. Then you had the setbacks, but you're talking about fighting against, you know, the best of the best. Tell me what you took out of those fights. What lessons did you take out of them?
Lessons is that no one's ever taken the dog out of me. No one's ever just whooped my ass, tossed me around. You know, I've lost these little split decisions that could have went my way. You know, I'm losing these little technical battles. And what do? I go and train with Tony Ferguson. And I started learning some footwork. I learned some fancy shit. I learned an incredible amount of stuff with him. So I'm always changing and always adapting. You got to ask yourself, how does a kid coming up from 21 years old, used to be a brawler, but yet I have multiple knockouts on my limbs. I continue to come back and get better and better and better. And I put you in fucking highlight fashion, real knockouts, bro. Too hot for TV type shit. and I embarrass people. And that's what I plan on doing Saturday night. Ain't nothing going to be different.
What's a workout like with Tony Ferguson? Do you do that crazy stuff he's doing, or did you draw the line and say, hold on, man, let's keep this a little more normal?
Ask my buddy back there, bro. He goes, man, I think you found your brother in life, man. And it was a great moment, because I actually do work out the same type of way, and I always known that we were kind of similar in a lot of sense. So we train about six and a half hours out of the day straight, just putting in fucking work. And then we chill out, watch Rocky IV, and then boom, go run around like midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning. And just I loved it. It was an incredible experience, and I can't wait to go back and help him out for his upcoming fight. So we made a brotherhood, and it's been great. I learned a lot from him.
That's awesome, man. All right, well, you talked about the setbacks, but now you're back in the main event, right? Before the setbacks, 2-0, pretty fantastic main event appearances. I mean, yeah. Is there something a little special, a little extra edge when you're the guy?
Yeah, it's five rounds. These guys can't run from me and squeeze out a little decisions in three rounds. The beat was looking up at the clock, gasping for air. If he didn't hit me in the nuts in the first round so damn hard, I would have kept going and put the pressure on him. I was breaking that kid, you know, and I feel like he has a lot more pop on his stuff, and he's a better wrestler. Yair can't fucking wrestle for shit. He's in trouble. I'm going to slam him on his head, and I'm going to cut him open. He thinks Frankie Edgar swole his eye. Wait till I cut him open. I've been in one of those bloodiest fights in history. You know, I just keep setting records. I keep continuing to get better, and it's going to be my time from Saturday night.
You said it, man. You've been down here for like a month at this point, man, and I wonder, you know, the altitude, you got to adjust for the altitude, but it seems like to me you're soaking in more than just the altitude, right? I mean, am I wrong in saying that, like, you didn't just get used to altitude? It feels like this was like a special camp for you.
Yeah, I wanted to put myself amongst the people. You know, I've been fighting for, what, 12 years in the UFC, 17 years in the game. Been fighting since I was 16. Everything I have is from my hands. You know, and I did most of my camps at home where I'm comfortable in my jacuzzi and my swimming pool and around my family and my beautiful wife cooking me all the delicious meals. Coming out here, I wanted to put myself amongst the people and embrace the culture. You know, not only did I get blessings, I've been to Temescal's, I've been running the mountains in La Bufa. You know, I really surrounded myself amongst the people and put myself in the culture. I love it here. This isn't my first time here in Mexico. I continue to spend my money here and support the people. And, you know, it's humbling walking around. You know, you go walk around, you see people cleaning the streets, you see people asking for money. You know, but what people really don't see that you get is just the love people have, you know, not just for fighting, but the love and the passion and the hard work and the dedication that these people portray. This is a beautiful country. I'm excited to be here. And like I said, I feel right at home.
So that's crazy for me, because at this point in your career, man, as long as you've been doing this, as much as you've been through, I mean, are you still like learning and developing and getting like new highs, I guess, and new motivations?
Yeah, this is, like I said, this is a new experience. I wanted to come down here. It took Yair a week and a half to even sign the contract, you know, and you know him about them contracts, boy. He's always duck, dodge, dip, ducking, dipping and dodging again. You know, and they told him, you know, I immediately accepted it. I wanted to be in the altitude. I wanted to come down here. I know the type of fans and everything they bring, and it's a new journey. It's a new experience, and I embrace it, man. You know, I'm enjoying every minute. I'm relaxed, cool as a cucumber, and I can't wait to go put his brains in the canvas Saturday night.
I know you're kind of an old school hardcore fighter. He seems like this kind of new generation. He's fancy. He's got, you
know. What is that? What is new generation, bro? What are you going to show me that I haven't seen or Bruce Lee hasn't shown on a movie? Like, what the fuck are you going to show me that's new? I just fought a guy just like you who's better than you and that you were afraid to fight. And ask yourself how I was breaking him. That boy's in trouble. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's got to think about, damn, I'm going up against a guy who I backed out of a fight from, and this guy put a pace on him and was whooping his ass, and I won the first and the third. If you beg to differ, just go back. He weaseled out the first round by doing some flashy shit. And I was putting knuckles to his head. And now this kid's got to go five rounds with me. Like, what are you going to show me that's new? Bro, I've been in there with better guys than you. You know, you're a kid, bro. You can't even fucking wrestle. Wait till I get a hold of you, man. You're in trouble. In trouble.
I love it, man. We touched on it there. Well, what does this fight mean to you, man? I mean, it's obvious what it means to you in terms of, like, this moment and, you know, this opportunity. I mean, are you thinking about rankings? Are you thinking about titles? Are you thinking about anything like that?
I don't think about any of that shit, bro. The only thing I think about is just putting knuckles in this dude's heads and put muscles in his chest and going home and taking care of my Mexican family back home with a lot of money in my pocket. That's what I think about, bro. I ain't worried about none of that bullshit. I'm here to kill him, bro. I'm here to win.
I was going to say, I think I've got an understanding of how this goes, but, you know, when you play this thing out in your mind, what type of fight is this? Is this some kind of back and forth, you know, battle that brings people to their feet, or are you going in there and doing something vicious?
I'm going to outsmart them. You know, people think, like, you're going to see a different Jeremy Stephens. I always have viciousness in me. I can even slow my punches down a little bit, and I'm still going to knock you out. You know, I'm going to outsmart this kid. I'm going to embarrass him. I'm going to outpoint him. I'm going to be in there every step of the way. And if I'm landing on you, you're going to be wearing it, bro. You know, like, what does he got, a spin kick, some kicks? Bro, you don't think Cerrone ain't kicked me? You don't think Pettis ain't kicked me? You don't think Sam Stout ain't kicked me or thrown some shit, Zabit? Bro, I walked through everything he had, and I put the pressure on. He was looking up and gasping for air. I got 5 rounds to destroy you. That's exactly what I'm going to do. Fuck knocking him out in the first. Fuck knocking him out in the fourth. I want to whoop this kid's ass so bad that he's going to be begging to get off the fucking stool and go home. You know, I want to embarrass him.
All right, well, look, it's going to be a fun main event. There's no question about it. But listen, Rodrigo, I noticed, and I'll be honest, I didn't notice it till this week, and we've kind of talked about it earlier today, but this is actually a pretty big card in terms of what it means to the Mexican market. I mean, at Media Day today, it was kind of cool after they did the face-offs, right? They brought up and, what, had 7 fighters up there, you know, all hailing from the Mexican market. And, you know, I mean, listen, there's a lot of fights going on, right? I mean, we're going from town to town. But from a Mexican perspective, man, this is good. And the co-main event, one of those fights right there, Carlos Barza versus Alexa Grasso. I feel like this is a huge moment for Alexa Grasso. I mean, she's somebody that I think we've all had our eye on for a long time. I mean, her skills were evident in Invicta, but she was still so young and so developing. But that last performance she had, man, I feel like she's really kind of reaching a new level, and she's ready to come into her own. And here she gets a former champion. You know, I mean, yes, I know a lot of people, you know, will point out it wasn't the longest title run of all time and that sort of thing, but it doesn't matter. Carlos Spar is a former UFC champion and somebody that's been around the game for a long time. I think this is a big moment for Alexa Grasso. You know, what are you feeling about this fight?
Yeah, it's a couple of things there. I mean, like, there is something to be said about what the UFC level is right now, where the line for a UFC show is now, about how many events we're going to get in a year. We're going to get 41, 42 this year.
Right.
And I do get it when someone from another country looks at a card and says, oh, that sucks. I'm going to go, I'm not watching it. This is nubs. I don't know. Fuck. You know? But you still have to think, if you want to, like, if you actually fucking care and you do your job, you have to think for these cards from a local perspective. This card means a lot to Mexico City.
Right.
You know, having 7 fighters in the same card is like this was a dream for Mexico like 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah, you couldn't even do it if you wanted to.
Yeah, having 4 top 10 fighters, like, yeah, the rankings in the UFC are shit. I'm not gonna color it. They suck.
Right.
They're shit, you know? I'm saying it, not UFC Today, no MMA Junkie, not John Morgan. Me, Rodrigo del Campo, the rankings are shit. But having 4
John
top
Morgan
10...
John Morgan would say they're lacking slightly.
They're lacking slightly. There's a supervision and revisions to be made in the process of voting in these rankings, but they're shit. But you have 4 top 10 Mexican-born, raised, and trained fighters.
That's big.
Because these 4 fighters aren't even training in the U.S. You know, they're not like Eric Perez, who used to train at Jackson's, now at Alliance.
Right.
You know, Brandon trains exclusively in Tijuana. He doesn't go into Alliance MMA. Entram Gym. Alexa and Irene train at Lobo Gym in Guadalajara. Yair did his whole training camp in Mexico with Pedro Camberos, a Mexican coach. So this is big for the region. There's no Hispanic American country right now that can put 4 fighters trained in their own country in the top 10 of any UFC division.
Yeah, that's true.
So that's what it means to the country. You know, it's like, okay, we have 4 top 10. I don't know if they're going to win, if they're going to lose. The 7 of them have tough fights. The Carlos Spars is obviously a tough fight. They know after the Tatiana Suarez fight that this is the fight.
Right.
It's a good opportunity for Alexa. Alexa was a fan of Invicta before signing to Invicta. So when she sees Carla, yeah, she sees a UFC champion. But she sees the champion of the division she signed to on Invicta. She's seen the Invicta belt.
That's
there.
Awesome.
So for her, it's like a lot of history, a lot of nostalgia.
That's cool.
And they knew when they fought, when they beat Carolina, and the way they beat her, like, they sat down and they knew, we're going to get tough fights for now, every single fight. it.
That's true. And this, you know, stylistically, this is a tough fight for her. There's no question about it.
You
right?
know, especially with this new Carla striking.
Oh, my
the
goodness.
Cynthia Calvillo fight. Yeah, no, she went on that losing streak after the Calvillo fight, rebounded against Virna Yandirova. But that fight with Cynthia Calvillo, when there was 15 minutes of stand-up,
yep.
where like we saw it. Carla is doing that.
Yep.
So now Carla can strike, she can kick, and she can obviously wrestle Alexa. That's not news.
I feel kind of bad for Carla Esparza because she does have some Mexican heritage. So it's like,
you She's Mexican and Ecuadorian,
so
right?
So it's cool yeah. of her to come down here, but like, sorry, you get the hometown girl. So
no, and in the media, like I get it. They do it like red corner and blue corner. And unfortunately for Carla, they had six Mexican fighters at the same time. No one's going to talk to Carla. Like, I'm sorry, I couldn't get to Carla.
Right.
You know?
That is kind of sad. She didn't get the attention she deserved. All right, one last thing on Grasso. Like, her English is phenomenal.
Yeah.
It's so good. And I think that's great. I mean, listen, and I'll say this out of respect. I'm not one of those people that says, hey, you need to learn our language. I'm not that guy. I'm not. Okay, listen, if anything, we need to learn your language. I mean, I'm raising my son to be bilingual, obviously. But it's just cool. I think it's awesome when people do take – I mean, English is obviously the most predominant language of the UFC. I mean, it's the biggest market, that sort of thing. I think it's cool, man. I mean, she's been slowly working on it, but it's good. I interviewed her this week. It's flawless now.
Yeah. You should speak English. If you're fighting the UFC and if you have the money and the time to speak English, you should speak English.
Yeah.
Obviously, in a lot of situations, maybe they don't have money, they don't have the time. Like, I get it. But you should try to speak English if you're in the UFC.
I dig it. Well, listen, I feel like this is a big moment for Grasso. I do feel like it's a very, very tough test. So can you put your Mexican bias aside and just as evaluation, I mean, do you think she's got what it takes to win this fight, or do you think this is too much right now?
If she can stop half of what Carla's going to try to do wrestling, she can win.
I agree. That's good. It's all going to boil down to
she's
that.
She's been training with a good Brazilian fighter who trains in Mexico, Alessandro Costa. Kind of built, he's at 125, who could probably fight at 115. He's a really small guy. Kind of built like Carla, with wrestling, good BJJ. That's what they've been training, but, you know, they trained a lot for the Tatiana fight, and we saw what happened, so.
That was tough, man.
Yeah,
Tatiana
was
a bad match
for it.
And I'm high on Grasso, but I really believe Tatiana's future
champ. I know a lot
champ.
Of people are in love with Weili Zhang and with Jessica. When Tatiana gets a crack at that belt, people do not know what to a wrestling world medals mean.
I agree.
She's going to be, when she gets that belt, she's going to be a champ for a long time.
She's going to be a problem, man. She's going to be a problem. All right, Brandon Moreno, you mentioned his name coming back, man. It's so good to see him back. I mean, talked to him this week, and he didn't seem to have a chip on his shoulder about being released. I mean, I know he wants to prove that they were wrong when he gets back, but he seemed to understand it was business. But I never thought they should have got rid of him. I think he's a great fighter, and he's a wonderful personality. And let me just say, I think he was getting as much media as anybody else today, man. I think he had a lot of people around him. I had to wait in line. He's fighting Askar Askarov, this newcomer, you know, this undefeated Russian fighter at ACB. We didn't get to talk to him. Now, I will excuse the PR team for this. For a lot of people that don't know, Askar Askarov is deaf, okay? Mm-hmm. So that creates an issue right there. You've got to have, you know, some kind of, like, sign language, I imagine, interpreter or whatever.
If then, he speaks sign language, because we don't know if
I don't
he signs.
Even, yeah, I've never, I don't know if he signs. And then, but then they didn't have a Russian to Spanish to English, you know, translator or whatever. So, we didn't get to speak to him. And I was bummed because I did kind of want to learn more about him. I'll be honest, I've seen his highlights. I don't know anything about the guy. I mean, I don't think there's a lot of interviews out there, a lot of things that you can glean from. So, as you said, I don't even know if he signs it. I know he's deaf, but I wasn't sure. So, I'm going to excuse the PR team for not having somebody there. But I was a little bit bummed just to kind of size him up a little bit. There's something different when you see somebody in person. You know, it's a little different than seeing him on TV. I kind of wanted to get a feel for his body type, his size, and find more about his story. Give me your thoughts on this fight, because I think Brandon Moreno absolutely deserves to be in the UFC, and I'm happy he's back, but he is sure as hell not getting a welcome mat on the way back in.
Look, the UFC can move around and tell whatever they want to tell. Brandon was one of the recipients of the call that said, hey, we're cutting the 125 division. We're going to let you go.
Yep.
Fighters were told the division was done. Whatever the UFC says, fighters were told the 125 division was done. Brandon understood it, man. He had a plan to go to 135. And then when they saw that the division was kind of rebounding, that's when they got the LFA fight. He doesn't have a chip about being cut. He understood. Lost two in a row. They're leaving the division. Okay, fine. He was kind of upset that it took them so long to cut him where he couldn't fight for a while because he fought in May and then he was cut in December.
That's not right.
That's like the thing he didn't like. He won the LFA fight. And now you talk to him and he even says, hey, you're the number 9 in the rankings. I'm not ranked. I shouldn't be ranked. I'm just back. Like, thank you. I shouldn't be ranked. I think they understand this is one of the toughest fights in his career. they understand that it's going to be difficult because people do not know Oscar. They maybe don't know how hard he is, how tough he is. And he's putting that aside, you know?
Yeah.
Just focusing on the fight, trying to get a good fight, a good result, and then trying to get, you know, into the cadence of the new flyweight division.
Oh, that is such a tough assignment, right? Because if Brandon Moreno comes out and wins this, the hardcores are all going to go, wow, that was pretty impressive. But to everybody,
the casual, yeah, he beat a Russian guy. What? Who's that?
That is a tough assignment, man.
That's tough.
I'm glad to see him back, and I'm glad to see the flyweight division sticking around. And I talked to Sergio Pettis this week. You know, he actually said he gave praise to Henry Cejudo. He said, Henry Cejudo saved the division, man. I was like, I can't believe you're giving the treat. He was like, much love to the Triple C. all right, listen, Irene Aldana versus Vanessa Mello. Of course, Irene Aldana, I couldn't believe she's never fought in Mexico City before.
They had like two small fights on the Grand Prix like a long time
right.
ago. I mean, she's from Culiacan. She started training in Guadalajara, so they kind of focused fighting there, and then went to Invicta. She didn't really have many fights.
Right, no,
when
she came
to Invicta,
early
like he had like three fights in Mexico, went to fighting Jungle Fight against Larissa Pacheco, and then got signed to Invicta off that Larissa Pacheco fight. I mean, Julie Ketze wanted to sign both Larissa and Irene. Larissa had already signed with the UFC, signed Irene, and through Irene discovered Alexa. Invicta didn't know about Alexa. Through Irene, they said, hey, you know, my teammate, she also fights, she's also good, and they got signed. And she hadn't fought with Alexa in the same crowd, I think, since 2015.
That's crazy.
In Invicta, you know, so that's kind of really motivating. Like, I don't know, like maybe for the hardcore or whatever, but this is the fight that the MMA gods do not want us to see. The second time that Marion Renault
right.
and Irene Aldana has been signed. Irene got injured the first time, and Marion then signed with the UFC, never fought in Invicta. Now Marion is out, and they know, like, they've seen Vanessa Mello. They think that she's going to try to take Irene's head off in the first few rounds. They know the altitude is going to eventually get to her.
Yeah.
And that's also, like, the difficult assignment. They know because this is a fight, I think they're conscious that this is a fight they could lose, that Vanessa is a tough girl with hard punches
yep.
and that has absolutely nothing to lose.
That's right. Coming in on short notice, nothing to lose whatsoever, making her debut. I did see, I mean, there's a big size difference between them, that's for sure. Aldana, a much taller opponent, I think
yeah.
she's got, I mean, Aldana, you can't not be a fan of, like, Aldana and Grasso, I mean, I hate to group them together, but you can't be a fan of one and not the other. I mean, they have such a similar style.
Yeah.
It's obvious, you know, they come out of the same camp. Great striking. I think Aldana, you know, as you said, I would think she'd want to stick and move and jab and kick from range and maybe tire Mello out.
Yeah, and just then, wait out the first 90 seconds
yeah.
to see what's going on. And yeah, when you see Alexa, when you see Irene, they're a true 115 and a true 135.
Yeah.
They're not that big to a division where they have to consider going up, but they're a true bantamweight and a true strawweight.
Where does their popularity stand in Mexico? Are they stars?
Good. Yeah, they're stars. I mean, there's no MMA stars really in Mexico.
Right.
I mean, we have to clear it up. Are there really MMA stars in the U.S.? Like, yeah, maybe Conor and Khabib.
Fair.
You know?
Fair.
So, I mean, in the MMA circles, in the people that like MMA, yeah, they're big.
Yeah, it's not like they're mainstream.
Yeah. They're not soccer.
Right.
I mean,
that's what it takes.
That's it.
This is a big moment for Irina too, man. I want to see her do well. I almost feel like, because it's funny, as you said, Aldana was kind of the entry for Grasso. I feel like at this point,
it's the other way around,
it's the
right?
other way yeah. around. Like, I mean, certainly it's easy to say that when you look at the card, Grasso's the co-main event, Aldana's a little lower down the main card, but I really do feel that way. Whereas when they were both in Invicta, I was like, they're both contenders. I still feel Aldana's got a lot
it
of skill.
It kind of flips sometimes.
But yeah, I feel like Grasso, like, she's becoming almost like the one that you're a little higher on.
Yeah, and the Raquel Pennington really affected. The Raquel Pennington fight really affected Irene. They had a problem with the recovery after the weight cut. She started feeling like her legs being weird after the recovery and fight day, and they thought it was nerves. Oh, it's just nerves. It's just nerves. It's just nerves. And then during the fight, like, her legs went dead.
Yeah.
And then when they sat with the Josh Lockhart team, they saw something in the recovery, and then she had her period doing the weight cut. Something in there really didn't stick when she was recovering, and it was that they're really paying attention to the recovery this time for this fight, because she know, I mean, it's three weight cuts in a really short time for her.
Yeah, really short time. All right, rounding out the main card, Martin Bravo versus
El Toro Bravo.
Since we're here, let's give it the accent, you know, versus Steven Peterson, the guy that comes from the Texas local scene, you know, Fortis MMA guy who hasn't had the best record necessarily in the UFC, but it's come to bring it every time.
He's from Fortis. He's a good guy. That's a
crew right
if
there.
If you're from Fortis MMA, you're a good fighter. That's it.
Talk to me about this fight, because I feel like a must win for both these guys.
I'm surprised they're so up the card, you know? I thought that slot was going to go to Sergio Perez, whoever he fought.
Right.
Be it Alex or be it Tyson Nam. I thought, and I think Martin kind of knows. You know, he told me one day, I think I'm way too high on the card. Don't you think?
He told you that?
He's super honest. He's a good kid from Playas de Rosarito, Baja California. He's super honest. They know. Like, they know the Martin fight and the Paulo Reyes fight, both teammates. They know they have to win. They know if they lose, they're gone. Like, there's no... They know. There's no sugarcoating. And I think for both fighters on both those fights, it's a must win or they're gone.
Yeah.
Martin hasn't fought in a while. He had a good fight against Cáceres. Couldn't get the decision. Couldn't get going in the last round, which I think cost him the fight. But then spent another year not fighting. I think that's kind of what has gotten to Martin. We'll see. I mean, he had a really high moment here in Mexico City, knocking out Claudio Puelles.
Yep.
And then he had a really bad moment getting knocked out for Humberto Bandenay in Mexico City,
that
too.
That was rough. Yeah. That was rough. Yeah, I think that's going to be a banger. It should be a good way to open up the main card. I mean, I guess if you're looking at it from that perspective, as far
yeah,
as like, let's just put
there,
something
right?
entertaining.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you are right. It is weird to me that Sergio Pettis really kind of...
Really down on the card.
Really low. Yeah. I'm even surprised that Betch Correa and Sajara Eubanks are that far down the card as they are. I mean, I get it. Like, that neither one of them have the greatest record of all time. But Sajar, you know, tough finalist. Betch Correa, former title challenger, like way down on the card. So, anyway, I'm a little interested in that. The Sergio one really stands out to me. What should we know? I know you got to get back to your other job, but the prelims, Teco, Marco Polo, I mean, one of those guys stand out to you more than the other?
Yeah, Teco's probably going to get, behind Jair, he's going to get the biggest pop in the arena. He's the fighter that people in Mexico really identify with. Again, we were talking about it just right now. You know, people in Mexico, when you see the idols Mexico has had, there have been men and women of the people. You know, they're not really braggadocious. They're not big. They're humble people. You know, and they see Teco like that. You know, they see a guy that's connected real to the street culture, and they call themselves Malilla, which Malilla is kind of like a thug without being a thug. You know, you're not a criminal, but you're kind of out there in the street. And people really do identify with Teco a lot.
He seems like a character. I wish he spoke some English, because he just seems like a character.
We told him, like, his team and us journalists, like, dude, you got to learn English. You got to learn English. He's never going to learn English. I know he's never going to learn English. And that's one of the cultural things you have to look at it. For Latin America, that's probably the biggest fight on the card. Because the Mexico-Peru rivalry, when you look at the results... It's not really a rivalry when you look how many Peruvian fighters in the UFC, how many Mexican fighters have been in the UFC, et cetera, et cetera. But the heat after the Horacio Gutierrez and Enrique Barzola fight in Monterrey that has generated between Mexicans and Peruvians, that's a really, really, really hot fight for Latin America. It should be an action fight. And Polo, I want to see Marco Polo. You call him Marco Polo, everyone in Mexico calls him just Polo. I want to see him on the weigh-in. I mean, he looks really good going down to 145. Some on Wednesday, some on Thursday. He looks good. He really looks good. I think he's going to make the weight without a problem. Talk to his coach today, and he says, yeah, I mean, he has to cut weight the way everybody else cuts weight, which he really hasn't done in the past.
Right.
I mean, they didn't want to mess with the winning formula of having him at lightweight, but there's a couple of fights, the last two he lost, that he's been giving up like 15 pounds on fight day. When they realize, you know, if we're going to get a last chance, he should be on featherweight. And they ask the UFC to have a featherweight fight. The UFC checked, like, how light he was on the last fight on arrival, and then how much he rebounded. Said, okay, I mean, he can
cool
make
to
it.
See
like
they
like
put
the
that
numbers.
Into it.
Then the numbers look like he can make it.
Yeah.
Okay, go to featherweight.
It is always interesting. Like you said, fighting at featherweight for the first time, I always do wonder, you know, is it going to be. I mean, because it's not just necessarily a magic bullet that, like, yep.
No, because, you know? I mean, the thing, I don't think a lot of fighters and a lot of camps think about it. It's not only making the weight. Is what you're going to do with recovery and what you're going to deal with. He might be heavier on fight day with all the rebound he's going to get because of the big weight cut.
Yep.
He might be heavier on fight day this Saturday than in his last fight. His last fight, I don't think he was 160.
Wow. That's
but
crazy.
When you cut so much weight,
yeah,
I mean, he'll rebound 15 pounds.
Absolutely. That's
you know?
Crazy.
So what is carrying that weight, carrying that rebound, maybe retaining a little water, feeling maybe a little slow, how is he gonna deal with that, you know? There's a lot of things about jumping weight classes that I don't think fighters in camp sometimes cover, you know?
No doubt. Listen, I know you got more work to do. So, like I said, I said I wouldn't take much of your time. And
I'm
I took
good,
a whole
man.
Lot of your time,
whatever time you want to take from me, I'm good, man.
You're the man. You're the man. All right, listen, let's put it. If you had to guess, how many wins does Team Mexico pick up?
If I don't say seven, they're going to kill me, John.
All right, so 7-0.
I got to say 7.
7-0, Team Mexico.
I got to say
7.
What are they going to do to me if I don't say 7?
I dig it, man.
It's difficult. I'm sorry to interrupt you. This kind of cards are really difficult for us because, you know, we obviously, everyone's biased. You're never unbiased. It doesn't happen. You have a lot of baggage. These fighters, at least these 7, really understand that this is when we're working. And this is when we're friends. It happens. But I started in journalism after a career in other things in production in 2012. And I started following those guys when they were far away from the UFC.
Right.
All the 7 guys. They were really far from the UFC, especially Brandon, because he was so young. And I've covered them through the 6 and 7 years from when I started to now. And it's so weird. And so sad, but also satisfying to see them, you know, on that stage. To see 7 Mexican fighters in a card, I never thought it would happen, you know?
And it's either we're going out on a high or we're going out on a low.
It could be 0-7. When you see the matchups, there is a distinct possibility that it could go 0-7. I mean, there's no gimmies.
It's either going to be electric in there or just dead quiet.
There's no gimmies. What happened a couple of years ago? I mean, the 4 interim guys all lost.
Yep, I remember that.
This is the first. That was the first time a Mexican camp had 4 fighters on the same card, and they all lost. It can be 0-7. There's no gimmies on any of their fights.
It's tense, man. It's tense. All right, listen, I got to let you go because I'm taking up too much of your time. But I'll tell you what, I'm happy that we're back in Mexico every year now that we got a TV deal. If nothing else, then at least I know I get to sit down and get this type of information from you, my man. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, John.
The one and only Rodrigo Del Campo, everyone. Listen, man, I love coming down here just to get his insight. And I'm not just saying that because he's sitting here. He is the man. But we must move on because he's got more work to do. So we go from one legend of MMA to another. That's right. The one and only Cole Coffee is in the building while I've been out here in Mexico City. He's been doing big things in Las Vegas. So, through the magic of audio editing, here's the man, Cole Coffee.
Well, hello, guys. And magically, now you're in Las Vegas. Whoa, how cool. Not quite as neat as being in Mexico City, where I'm always told the stories of all the tacos and good stuff that they're eating down there. I have yet to go down there, so I have to live vicariously through John's and everyone's stories of all the big taco dinners and stuff that they have down there. And I'm sure there's a few cervezas and things getting thrown down. But thanks for joining me. I want to tell you about today. Today here in town, the PFL announced a partnership that they will be doing with Extreme Couture and Randy's GI Foundation. It's a foundation he set up to help families of veterans who have been injured, suffering ailments, you know, whether it be a physical or mental issues that they're dealing with. He saw a need to help out our veterans. A lot of times, you know, veterans and going to the Veterans Affairs and doing with the different things to try to get the support and the help that they need. A lot of times that help doesn't come quick enough. And, you know, whether it be, you know, things like mental issues or say, you know, for more serious things like prosthetics, surgeries. Money's just to help support families while they're with their loved ones who are in hospitals or in different other places, you know, that, you know, for long term, you know, a soldier might be getting treatment and their family wants to be there with them. And a lot of times they're going to stay with them and that causes undue hardship on these families. And the GI Foundation is helping out with some of that. There's other great organizations that you'll hear in this interview that Randy mentions, one that I really, really like a lot and that I donate to, and I'm a big believer in. It's the Fisher House Foundation. It helps provide housing for the families of our troops and veterans who are receiving treatment for different issues, and it provides a home for them to stay in. And think of it almost like a and Randy uses the same sort of terminology here, and it's a good way of thinking, but like a Ronald McDonald House. You know, it's a communal space where people can go and you know, stay together, but so the family's nearby. A lot of times these treatments and things that the soldiers have to go through take some time. And, you know, it's nice that they have a place to go, and it's a little bit better than just being in a hotel, and it's a lot more cost effective because it's all handled for them. I was very happy to go down there. You know, I was raised in a military family myself, so my father was in the military. My mom was a civilian that worked for the military. Stepdads were in the military. Both my brothers were in the military. I had a grandfather that was in the military. I had uncles in the military. You know, I always joke and say I was the only one that didn't go in the family business, at least the only boy that didn't go into the family business. So I have a lot of respect for those who serve and those who have served, and especially to those who have given all and sacrificed for our country. So anytime that there's a chance that something gives back, you know, I'm all about it. So I was glad to see this partnership. And, you know, in a nutshell, it's allowing, I think it's going to be more so, but think of it, there's going to be a raffle that takes place at a lot of these events, and it's a 50-50 raffle. UFC does a lot of 50-50 raffles as well for charity at some of the events. This is another one along those lines where the proceeds will all go to the veterans' families after they it's split with the, you know, raffle winner. But it's nice, and Randy will kind of tell you too, you know, his organization's doing really, really good stuff. I mean, he's using a lot of his staff from Extreme Couture, so they're already getting paid, and it's something that they love, so they don't mind helping out. So there's practically no overhead at all, according to him. So this all the money that's raised is going to these veterans. So hats off to him, and I gave him a big thanks for what he was doing. So that's enough of me jabbering about that, but it's always great to be able to have a chance to sit and talk to a Hall of Famer, but let alone somebody that's really working his butt off to give back to the troops and those who make what we do in life possible. So my utmost respect to him for doing that, and you know, it was good. It was moving. I was a little moved today. So, again, enough of me. Here is my conversation with Randy, and then we'll toss it back over to John. So, thanks, guys, and I hope you all get a chance to maybe look up the GI Foundation and you know, and see what they're doing. And if there's another organization that's doing great things in your neck of the woods, I encourage you to do what you can to help out those who have made it possible for us to do what we need to do. All right, y'all. Here is Randy Couture. All right, Randy, you talked a little bit up there about the GI Foundation. I guess when you thought about starting this organization, what was the biggest thing that you noticed that was maybe lacking in the outside world that yeah. wasn't being taken care of at that time?
In 06, I got to go to Iraq. Me and Rich Franklin went to Iraq and spent 12 days on the ground there with the guys that were actually fighting the battle. And it was a really, really interesting trip. Saw a lot of things firsthand, and then the next year I got to go to Walter Reed and Bethesda. They have the Fisher House, which is their kind of version of the Ronald McDonald House, and we put on a big barbecue for all the caregivers and people in the Fisher House and some of the guys that were on outpatient status at that time. And me, Don Fry, and Ken Shamrock got to walk through the wards and you know, two or three floors and meet just a whole bunch of the guys fresh off the battlefield. And that's when I start hearing, oh yeah, my mom's been down here for 6 months as my caregiver, and you know, we parked her car in the parking structure and they put a boot on it. We can't afford to get the boot off of it. You know, other guys, oh, my dad's been down here with me for 9 months now. They just fired him and he lost his job, but he wants to be here to support me. And just stories like that over and over and over again, these financial burdens these guys are struggling under while they're in that kind of extreme transition period. And you know, I was just like, we got to do something to help these guys. It's that simple. And right away, and in 07 filed for the 501c3 status, and we've been doing this since then. And again, started right here with our gym staff, You know, I already pay them. They already work for me. They're on board with the mission and what we're trying to accomplish already, and are happy to be involved. So we have no real overhead other than what our events cost us to put on. And almost all of them have been successful. They're not all successful, but most of them are successful. We were on the plus side of things. We make money, and all that money goes into the hands of a soldier and his family.
Do you have any sort of, I know as it's getting bigger and as you're getting more involvement from organizations like PFL and other ones, what sort of capacity, what sort of numbers of troops and veterans have you been able to reach, and how many are you able to help in a year, and how many, what is,
last
I guess,
year,
the goal?
Last year, I got to sit down with 16 families and write a $10,000 check to each one of those families.
Wow.
This year, it looks like I'm going to get to sit down with 20 families. And maybe more, depending on how October goes and this 50-50 raffle and the stuff that the PFL is getting behind. I'm scheduled to be in D.C. at Walter Reed on the 13th of November to hand out the money we've raised this last year. So I'm still waiting to hear exactly how many families we have lined up, but I suspect it's going to be in the neighborhood of 20. Excited. We just keep continuing to get traction. Things like this, the PFL getting behind us, all the other opportunities that we get to let people know what we're doing. Tough Enough, Operation Knockout, this is going to be our 11th year doing that. And Tough Enough is one of the premier amateur organizations here in Vegas. And they put on a fight night, and all the proceeds from that fight night go to the foundation. It's really, really cool of them to do that. There's been several other people in this community that see what we're trying to do and what we're trying to accomplish, and they've just gotten on board. It's been amazing.
I love that you're helping with the Fisher House. That's one of the probably the only charities that I donate to, because I think they do a great job. And you're right, that's another one where their support for families, it's another, a lot of times we're always talking about the veterans, but the families alongside are suffering and are hurting as well. So I applaud you for doing that as well. Have you thought about, with your namespace, being in Hollywood and doing all these other things, have you tried to talk to Congress or lobby any of these people and address some of the issues that are maybe, I think it's great what you're trying to do on your own. Have you thought about trying to go to talk to the people that are making the policies?
We have a vet here that trains here. His name is Bruno, and Bruno has been very actively involved in the state of Nevada, getting bills passed, veteran bills passed and things like that. I haven't really gotten involved in that. I've just been spread so thin between the Extreme Couture GI Foundation and all the stuff that we do for the MVP chapter here, and then all my other regular business stuff, the PFL and acting and the business stuff that I do. I'm just spread too thin. I'm lucky to even get out to Congress to try and get the Ali Act amended. I mean, that's kind of been the extent of it. I haven't found, and I feel like right now we have a very veteran-aware, pro-veteran administration. And, he's signing bills, he sees the issues, he's trying to clean up some of that stuff. And so I think that a lot of that, at least in the last 3 years, in my estimation, are starting to be addressed. But I still feel like there's so many. I mean, we have 50,000 guys that are homeless that served our country. That's just disgusting to me. I know there's an initiative here. They're providing houses for some of these guys, getting them off the street, so they're not homeless. So I think there are a bunch of us smaller ones, and we're trying to link arms and make a bigger impact. But I haven't run across that thing where I'm like, oh, damn it, I got to go try and do something. We're doing our part.
So for the person that's on the fence, I think there's a lot of charities out there that are always trying to grab people's dollars. What would you say to the people that have some money that can donate something to get them off the fence to give to your organization?
I think do your due diligence. Look at the percentage, because they have to put, if you get a 501c3, you have to disclose. It has to be transparent. You have to have a board and have to be accountable to that board and to the tax industry, the IRS. Where did that money go? What's that money for? So do your due diligence these days, because there are organizations out there, frankly, that are taking advantage of people and not doing what they're supposed to be doing with that money. So, and that's why I'm proud of the fact that literally 100% of everything that we raise goes where it's supposed to go. Our only cost is what it costs us to put on these events. So, to have an organization like this get behind us, I mean, we don't really have to do anything. I'm already involved. The gym's already here. All this stuff is already in place. So, it's all gravy. It's all going to help somebody.
Well, thank you. Thank you for your time, and thank you for that. And you brought up one thing I have to ask you. What is going on with the whole Ali Act and the push towards that sort of things with involvement in MMA and that sort of thing?
Yeah, H.R. 44 is still on, still being pushed. We're still being lobbied against pretty seriously. They've found ways to stall us You know, they bounced us from one committee. We were originally in the Energy and Commerce Committee, which is where the Ollie Act originally was implemented in 96 for boxers. We were with that committee. We had 60 bipartisan supporters in Congress. It looked like a no-brainer. And then they somehow got us tossed to an education committee, and now we have to kind of start all over again. You know, Mark Wayne Mullins, who was kind of spearheading the Republican congressman from Oklahoma, who's a wrestler and a fighter, knows full well what those contracts look like and how this whole thing works out. So he was the one spearheading it, and by getting it bounced to the other committee, he's not on that committee. So now we kind of we got Joe Kennedy is the Democratic side of the House. Mark Wayne is on the Republican side of the House. All of their buddies, they all see this. I mean, it's as plain as the nose on your face, and really. Two ways that we can affect and make some sort of change in the sport of MMA and get the protections that boxing has enjoyed for a while. The first is the class action lawsuit that you know is going on, and some of the things that are coming out now in their final stages of registering us as a class have been really, really interesting and have shed a light on all the shenanigans and the kind of the crap that's been going on with our fighters. The other thing that we can do as fighters is come together. You know, I'm the spokesperson for the MMAFA, the Fighters Association. Every other professional sport in our country has a players association or an association. Why shouldn't we have that too? Why shouldn't we get to negotiate for our fair share of what's going on in this sport? And I think that the Ollie Act, getting it amended, just that definition, change it from boxing to combative sports athlete, will in a lot of ways create that transparency, eliminate some of this. It's a lopsided power, basically, that sanctioning body and the promoter shouldn't be the same guy. It's way too much power. So, separating some of that out, creating that transparency, that disclosure. Look, you made this much off this event that you fought on. You know, you want me to fight again? I should be able to negotiate my fair share of what's coming in from the events that I put my butt on the line for. So, I mean, that's basically what it boils down to and what hasn't been happening. And that's why they're lobbying so hard against us, because they have a money printing machine and they don't want to mess that money printing machine up.
Yeah, and it's got to be tough when they push it into another committee now and it sort of sets it back. But are you guys confident? You think 2020 is the year that something happens?
I just think that inevitably, first of all, we're fighters. We're pit bulls. We've got this idea and this is going to happen. So, I mean, we're not going to let it go. And they're going to continue to lobby and spend money with lobby groups to keep us off the Senate floor and keep it from the final votes that need to happen to get it passed, to get the amendment passed. So I just think sooner or later, it's just too obvious. It's too plain to everybody. That it needs to change.
All right, so there you have it. Cold coffee catching up with Randy Couture, the former UFC champion, the UFC Hall of Famer who's always involved in some type of charitable opportunity. And I know to cold coffee, anything that involves the military means a lot to him. He's a military brat, so... good stuff there, and good stuff about the Ollie Act and the MMAFA and the organizational efforts. I mean, the war carries on there. You know, Randy has been at the forefront of those battles and more for a long time, and it looks like even though you kind of have ebbs and flows of it, it looks like Randy is not going to back down from the fight. And of course, you know, that lawsuit that's happening carries on. A lot going on behind the scenes with that, and We'll see how that all develops, but good to hear from Randy Couture, and good to hear from Cold Coffee. We'll be back together next. Oh, you know what? I lied. We won't be back together next week. He is going to be in LA for Bellator. Big weekend next weekend, man. Big weekend. We'll have the European crew out at the Bellator event in Dublin. We'll have our LA crew plus Cold Coffee at the Bellator event in LA. Unfortunately, Copenhagen, the only one we'll have there is Per, our photographer based in Europe, so he'll be over there shooting that. But a big busy weekend, a triple event weekend, quadruple event weekend, if you will, if you count the Dublin card as two events. But we'll get into all that next week and try to sort that all out. In the meantime, as far as this week goes, one more guest before I flew down here to Mexico. I had a chance to catch up with Eddie Alvarez. Of course, he's competing at ONE Championship 100, titled Century. It takes place October 13th in Japan, so that'll be about 1 month from now. two full cards. I mean, they're just loading up everybody they can. This is a big, big moment for them. And, of course, one of those is going to air live in the U.S., so that'll be the first time they've had a live TV show. And they're planning on coming to the U.S. in 2020. So one championship, you know, they've been making waves behind the scenes, you know, the big free agent signings and all that. And, you know, I think they've mentioned it, but behind the scenes, if they haven't mentioned it publicly, I can't remember. They're definitely talking about trying to do an event in the United States in 2020. And listen, man, this is a big, you know, another launching point of their big push, I guess. And Eddie Alvarez, of course, a big component of that. He was initially eliminated from this lightweight Grand Prix. He was brought back as an injury replacement, and then he made his way into the finals of the lightweight Grand Prix, and he will fight in Tokyo on this event. It is a stacked card, man. I know some of the names you might not recognize, but they're loading up everybody they can, and of course they've got the ones you do recognize as well on ONE Championship 100. So here's my conversation with the Underground King.
Hello,
Eddie.
Hey, what's up, John?
Not much, man. How you doing, brother?
Excellent, man.
Well, talk to me, Eddie. I mean, listen, you've been at ONE for a while now, man. It's getting up to the better part of a year now. So, I mean, just give me the take, man. What's your overall feeling? What's the experience been like for you?
I'm excited, man. I've been over there a number of times, not even outside of fighting, got to watch the shows there. And ONE's on a roll. They're doing their own thing, man. And what's going on in Asia is something magical. Like the live shows, the live events, the production, everything that's going on, it's just fun to be a part of something like that. And my biggest excitement is when they touch down here in the United States, because there's really nothing like it. And I fought for Bellator, I fought for UFC, I understand fighting and just the people behind it and what they're about. And what they're trying to produce, it's exceptional. I'm just glad to be a part of it, and I feel like I'm a part of it in its infancy. Like it's not even grown here in the United States at all. No one even knows about it.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, is that tough for you at all? I mean, you know, obviously, for as far as here goes, the fights are in the middle of the night, early in the morning. So, I mean, you're not as much in the public eye for the last year as you have been for. Gosh, how long in your career? You know, has that been tough for you at all?
Well, right, you take one step back, and three steps forward, and that's kind of how I took it when I signed the contract. I said, okay, initially I'll fight in I'm gonna fight in Asia, and I'm totally fine with that. I loved fighting in Asia when I did fight in Asia. I have a huge fan base in Tokyo already from my fights back. Between 2006-2008, yep. With Dream, so I already had a huge following, but I knew what their goal was. You know, their goal is to come here to the United States to have a TV partner here in the United States, and also come here to the United States and have fights. So for me, I'll fight anywhere. I fought all over the world for every promotion in the world, and I didn't mind going to Asia. I actually enjoyed traveling the world and seeing new places that I never got to see.
Yeah, no doubt. What about how about this? I mean, you're one of the big guns. You know, they make these big moves, they make these big hires, and then you go over there and first one out, you lose. What was that like for you, man? I mean, did that get to you at all, man? I mean, obviously you've lost before and you've been on the big stage before, but I mean, what was that moment like?
It stunk, man. definitely, like. When the fight got over, you know, I really was more worried about my health than worried about the win or loss, because it was such a bad injury. The injury was so bad that I kind of was like, look, if the worst that came from this was that you lost the fight, then you got off lucky, because I wasn't sure once the injury happened that if I'd be able to fight again. Like,
wow.
That's how... Like my eyelids, both of them were split in half, and my eyeball, I just felt like a bunch of air getting in my eyeball, and my eyeball itself is bleeding all over. Like there was blood bubbles in my eyeball. So the fact that I can see today and that I'm able to still fight another day was, I kind of looked at it that way. And I wasn't looking at it like the loss. I was looking at it like, my coaches, my teammates, and myself, I improved so much leading up to that fight. In the 4 months of that fight, I was doing things that I never done before. I was improving in ways that I haven't in years. So I tried to keep my focus on my improvement that I made and not let it all go to shit by having a bad attitude about the outcome of the fight. So rather than like the fans, oh, you lost, just and that, I just kind of didn't pay attention to them. And I really keyed in and focused on my improvements that I made.
I didn't realize that it was that serious, man, with your eyes afterwards. Did you, I mean, I know you're a family guy, man. Did you start having like serious conversations at home? Like, hey, or is this starting to be too much?
No, I mean, I've had them serious conversations for the last 15 years, so I don't, I mean, people ask, oh, when are you going to retire? I'm like, I've been trying to retire for years. I love this. I can't seem to get it out of my life. And it's something I'm probably going to be involved in, you know, my whole life, not competitively, of course, but I enjoy what I'm doing. So, yeah, it was serious. It was really serious, and I was glad that we got past it, and I'm healthy.
Yeah, so I guess with that in mind, I mean, the win over Foliang, I mean, obviously you want to get the win, but I don't know, was there some kind of deep inside that was a little more meaningful, you know, to you personally?
Yeah, it was like, for me, the Foliang thing was just continuing my improvement that I built upon in the 4 months leading up to the Timothy fight, and just continuing to get better. I want to fight often. You know, I wanted to fight often this year, so I wanted to at least get 3 or 4 fights in this year, and I just wanted to improve. I just kept my focus on that. The outcomes of the fight, they are what they are. I mean, I'm going to do my best out there, and I'm going to try to beat opponents. But I knew that if I continued to improve the way I was, that the byproduct of that would be, you know, victories. It was just a matter of time. Yeah. The Foliang fight, I went in injured. I knew I had an injury, and he took advantage of it. He kicked my leg out, and I just fell to the mat. Like, I was busted up going into that fight, but I wanted to fight. I didn't want to pull out of the fight, so you know, the fight was what it was.
So you get to the finals, and you got this Dagestani monster on the other side, man. He's been tearing through people, man. I feel like this is a Rocky movie or something, man. You know what I mean? Fighting this beastly Russian over in Japan. I mean, talk to you about this guy. I mean, there's not a lot of tape on him because he gets his fights done pretty quickly. So what do you think about the matchup? What do you think about him as an opponent?
I think he's really well-rounded. He's big. He's strong. He's good everywhere. Like, there's nothing bad to say about him, right? Like, the guy, he's a great opponent. He's a great competition to have. So I'm just looking forward to putting my best foot forward. And I have what it takes to beat anyone, and not just him. This fight has nothing to do with him. I have all the tools to beat anyone in the world, and I've proven that over and over. So it's really about going out there, being focused, and just letting the game day play itself out. I'm excited. I have everything that it takes to beat a guy like this. I scouted him out. I see what he's strong at. I see what he's weak at, and we'll be able to exploit his weaknesses. I've been 10-0 with all knockouts in the first round. Like, I've been there in my career, and I've been there, and I've never been in a real fight. Mm. So, you know, the idea is to put this guy in a real fight, and people who dominate the way he does and don't get out of the first round the way he does, the idea is to put these guys in a fight, in a real fight against a real fighter, and then they get to really check, you know, who they are inside. So we want to get them to dig deep a little bit.
No doubt about it. I wonder, Eddie, I mean, you said you fought in Japan earlier in your career, and I mean, you fought around the world. Are you surprised at all by the level of global talent? I mean, were you expecting to, like, did you think you'd be able to go over there and just tear through everybody, or were you expecting to go over there and face really tough people?
No, I went over there already in 2008, and I seen what I seen. You know, when I went over there in 2006 or 2008, there was Kawajiri, Joachim Hansen, Shinya Aoki. They weren't, just because they're not signed with the, you know, UFC, that means nothing.
Right.
You know what I mean? people get a misconception that the most popular guys are the best guys, and it's not always that way. The best guys in the world are virtually unknown. They're in the foothills of Dagestan. They're in the jungles of Brazil. They're all over the world, and a lot of them are unknown. So, I definitely was not taking anyone lightly, and I'm still not.
No question. Talk to me about the weight cutting system over there, Eddie. I think that's the one thing we're all trying to wrap our heads around here in the United States is this the right solution? Is it being implemented fairly? I have noticed, I'm not going to lie, that the guys you guys are fighting look bigger than you. I told Demetrius the same thing the other day. I feel like you guys are fighting monsters over there. So tell me about the weigh-in system and kind of if you think it's good, bad. You've seen it all. So, I mean, are they onto something there?
Yeah, the guys do. They do seem bigger, but like for me and Demetrius, we're guys who've been cutting weight and doing it a certain way for so many years. So there's definitely a learning curve for the both of us. Demetrius actually helps me, like with the hydration. Like he's helped me every time I go out there. I'm like, I don't know. I do my best in what I know. Mm-hmm. But Demetrius, like, is able to check himself. He helps me along because he knows the process better than I do. So, you know, it's basically you have to be hydrated, number one. So they're checking your hydration. You're going to take a pee, and they're going to check the pee. They're going to do a test with the pee. So you have to pass that. There's a certain level of criteria to pass that. Once you pass that, then you step on the scale, and you check your weight. And you have to be under the weight limit. So there's two criteria instead of one. It's not just the weight itself, because anybody could weigh in at any weight
right.
and be completely emaciated. Yeah, so
that's it.
and not really be healthy to fight. So they're trying to skip that process where people are hurting themselves. And then also putting themselves in jeopardy and putting the whole fight in jeopardy. Because how many guys we see, you know, trying to make weight and the fight never happens.
Yep.
So it's a good thing. What it does is it's good for the promoter, one, because the fights happen almost every time out. Right? No one's – you're not going to get a last-minute dropout because the guy's kidneys failed.
Right.
It's good for the fan because you're going to get a hydrated, explosive, ready-to-go fighter. And it's good for the fighter. It's good for his health to be hydrated, to be healthy, to be able to go out there and fight his best. So it's a win-win for everyone involved. And, you know, I'm not sure there is a better way.
Yeah, nice. Well, cool, man. Well, listen, I know that's a big fight. I know we still got a month. We'll probably talk a little closer, too. But give me an idea. What's the overall plan right now? You win here. Do you still want to sneak one in? You said maybe fight four times. Could you sneak one in before the end of the year? And then, I guess, looking forward, kind of what's the plan next year? We hear, you know, a United States event is imminent. It's definitely coming. Is that what you got your eyes on? You wanting to be on that? Or do you kind of enjoy traveling? Just give me the idea. What's the goals for you right now?
The goal is to capture the tournament belt. After I capture the tournament belt, I would like to be able to enjoy Thanksgiving, enjoy Christmas, you know, enjoy the holidays a little bit. I had a busy year. Three fights is probably the most I fought in a year in a long time. Yeah. So I'd like to enjoy that, get rested, and then come back strong in very, very early 2020. And capture the one championship world title, and from there be undefeated. My goal is to go undefeated from here on out. I got that debut out of my way, and now I want to beat everyone.
I dig it, man. I dig it. Hey, one last thing for you. Did you watch Habib the other night? Did you get a chance to watch that fight? What do you think about him as a champ right now?
Yeah, I watched the Habib fight. It went very according. Went according to the way I thought it would. I wasn't super surprised. I'm not a big ground fighter. Like, that's not my goal when I go into a fight.
Right.
And when I fought Dustin the second time, I found myself in positions where I was being dominant on the ground, and I didn't necessarily have a goal to do that. So
that's interesting.
when I found out he's fighting Khabib, that's Khabib's whole game, right? Yep. So I thought to myself, like, if it's not even my goal, it's not even my thing, and I was dominating and about to finish a fight on the ground, I thought for sure Khabib would be able to get it done. Both guys, you know, Dustin put out his best effort and so did Khabib, and Khabib, as always, was very dominant. I think it's going to take a certain style, and if you don't have that style, there's a certain style you have to implement to beat him. And I feel like I can implement that style the best of the in this division. And I don't know who else could. When I think about the other competition, the other top 10 in the UFC and the other guys around, I don't know if they're able to implement the type of fight that you have to do to beat Khabib.
What do you think that type of fight is? Because I think that's what everybody's trying to figure out. I mean, obviously, some defensive wrestling is probably going to be involved, but you got to, what, rough him up in the clinch a little bit? What do you think that style is?
The most I can say is I've done it before. I've done it before with other, like, if you watch the second Mike Chandler fight,
right?
And you watch fight like that where you have a guy who just throws a big punch, tries to run you in the cage, tries to rip you to the ground and pound you out on the ground. It's like, that's the style you'd have to implement against a guy like that to beat him. You can't stand in front of him. You got to be able to move laterally. You got to be able to shut down his wrestling. And when you do get into wrestling exchanges, you can't be dominated. You got to have another wrestler who can match his wrestling, you know?
Yep. Very true.
I don't necessarily see Khabib as undefeated. I think Gleison Tibau beat Khabib.
That's fair.
When I watched that fight back, I feel like Gleison beat him. So there's a style out there, and there's a way to beat him.
I dig
it. Right now he's the champ.
Good stuff, Eddie. Hey, man, I appreciate the time, brother. And I'm sure we'll talk again when we get close to the fight, man. But thanks for this today, brother.
Okay, I'll see you.
See you, bro. All right, so Eddie Alvarez, man, got to be honest, I didn't even realize, like, you know, the kind of the injuries that he had to deal with to get through that. So it was good catching up to him, and again, big stuff on the horizon for one championship, so we'll certainly pay attention as they push into the U.S. market. I imagine we'll be talking more about them next year. So, listen, it's been a busy show. We didn't even get to all the fights, man. Rodrigo Da Campo, man, what a great man. I just can't say enough about his breakdowns, his analysis, and his knowledge, man. Guy's got passion for the game. But Angela Hill taking on the newcomer and Ariana Kynalosi. Tyson Nam finally making it to the UFC against Sergio Pettis. Paul Craig, roadshow favorite, man. He was had a great interview with him. That's on YouTube and on MMA Junkie as well if you want to check that out. Fun little sit-down with him. And he was polite enough to talk slowly for us. He knows that we can't understand him all the time when he speaks at full speed. So, Betch Cojea versus Sajara Eubanks. So, some big fights there. And, of course, it starts out with Marcos Mariano versus Claudio Puello. So, anyway, I think it's going to be a fun fight card in Mexico. I do. And as Rodrigo so eloquently laid out, I mean, look, you took a quick look at it and you may go, just another card. But, you know, a big moment for Mexican Mexican MMA, the return to Mexico City after a couple years away. So I'm excited for the card. Should be a lot of fun. And, of course, we will have full coverage of it at MMA Junkie. Be sure you check all of that out on Saturday. And in the meantime, all I can say is thanks for listening.
Moro Casino, America.
America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.